Greetings, Hempster. Thank you for joining me on another Hempisode of HempAware Radio. Tyler Hemp here, your Hemptrepreneurial host, here to empower and hempeducate your hemposphere because it's important. So you know how hemp entrepreneurs and hemp companies and hemp enthusiasts around the world struggle to market and sell their products effectively? Well, not having the right tools, information, and resources to grow your hemp business can make it difficult to attract the right people that can really benefit from what you have to offer. But it doesn't have to be that way. And that's why at HempAware, we provide strategic marketing and branding so that hemp entrepreneurs just like you can transform the planet with your hemp products and services and transform the world in a way that supports all life. So if you're struggling to get traffic to your website or convert that traffic into ongoing sales, just visit hempaware.com and check out some of the valuable resources that we have for hemp entrepreneurs and companies just like yours. On today's show, I'm excited to have an important conversation with Hempwood founder Greg Wilson. And the reason it's so important is because his hemp product line addresses one of the most unspoken issues of our time, and that is toxic building syndrome. Millions of people across the world are living in buildings that are off-gassing poisonous chemicals and are essentially breeding grounds for mold and mildew and fungus and all sorts of crazy bacterias on top of the poisons that are off-gassing. And then we all just, you know, bask in this toxic box all day, whether it's our offices or our homes. And it's a very big deal, not to mention the major issues with deforestation and toxic petrochemicals that are being used in a lot of building materials. But incidentally, the Los Angeles Public Health Department has reported that up to 60% of office workers report at least one health problem attributable to the workplace each year. And according to Mainspring Recovery, approximately 70% of homes have some kind of mold in them. And they also reported that at least 45 million buildings in the U.S. have unhealthy mold levels. So keeping up with humidity levels, you know, keeping it below 50% and making sure that you have good airflow are good ways to prevent these mold issues. But it's not always possible or easy to keep up with that. But if there was a way to use building materials that made it easier to prevent toxic building syndrome in the first place, then that's what we're interested in. That's what we're going to be talking about today. So thank you so much, Greg. I really appreciate what you're doing with Hempwood and really excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, thanks for having me. So this is Greg Wilson calling in from Murray, Kentucky, the headquarters of Hempwood, where we work 6 days a week making hempwood flooring, furniture, and cabinetry that we sell direct into commercial projects, as well as through a residential retail flooring network. And then we'll help out any folks that fall outside of the region where we do have material at. So
right on. Well, I have some questions lined up for you getting into the actual product line and, you know, the benefits. But before we kind of go into that topic, what's your background? Like, what did you study? What led you up to being inspired to even create a hemp wood-based company in the first place?
Well, I came from the bamboo industry. So my family are builders. I studied building material engineering. I was working in a vinyl siding mill, and then I did an internship in a wood flooring business. And then I ended up working in the bamboo flooring industry, where I helped pioneer and invent strand woven bamboo. So I was living over in China for, oh, quite a long time, up until 2018, so about 14 years before that, making bamboo flooring. And then when hemp became legal in, oh, 2014, I started kicking around the idea. 2016, I filed the patents. In 2018, I moved to Kentucky. I now live on an organic hemp farm in West Kentucky. I was previously living in the bamboo forest in Anji, China.
Wow, that is super cool. I actually didn't know that about you. So obviously, bamboo is touted as a sustainable, eco-friendly product. I'm curious, why switch over to hemp? Why not just keep doing the bamboo flooring and stay in that industry?
Well, the primary reason was what you were talking about with sick house syndrome. Bamboo flooring, as well as most engineered wood products, use phenylformaldehyde or formaldehyde to bond it together. And so I started getting sick from that, like seriously sick, hospitalized and things like that. And so we came back with the idea because I was in charge of R&D for the company. My little company got bought by a group of people that put us all together and listed it on the stock exchange. We came up with being able to use a soy-based adhesive to replace formaldehyde. And meanwhile, I'm getting lung treatment because of being exposed to it in the production process. And the marketing team came back and said that increasing the cost by 20% to use a plant-based glue would not work in the market because an extra dollar a square foot meant $2 to the end customer. And they changed the name from phenylformaldehyde to phenolic resin on the STS sheets, the safety data sheets for the product. So I quit and we got in a big fight about who owed who what. And I was allowed to keep my research and they kept a lot of my options in the company that hadn't invested yet. So I came here and built Hempwood using a soy-based glue, using hemp instead of bamboo, soy instead of formaldehyde, in America instead of China.
That's awesome. That's a really cool transformation. And I'm sure it feels rewarding to now bring it back home, support local farmers, support local businesses, and not to mention get away from all that toxic formaldehyde. That's pretty sad that they're using a sustainable, eco-friendly product that grows 2 inches a day, and yet they're having to blend it with this toxic compound. And then to be shady and change the name is really sketchy, but I'm glad you were able to get out of that and create a solution, an alternative, especially for people here in the U.S. So it makes sense, your background being in flooring, why you would just immediately transition into creating these hemp wood replacements for flooring. And we'll get into kind of some of the other uses here in just a moment. But in terms of the environmental or even like structural aspects and features of your product, how does it compare to a bamboo or a typical lumber type product?
Well, the company's name is actually Fibonacci. It's not Hempwood. If you look at the logo, you'll see the little tree that goes through the O in Hempwood. And that is because the Fibonacci sequence is nature's algorithm. It's the second most common number in nature behind pi, which today is Pi Day. You've got phi. And that tells you the most efficient use of space. So the way like the snail's shell grows, all of the seeds in a sunflower, every blade of grass or leaf on a tree packs into the most efficient use of that space for water, for carbon being pulled from the air, carbon dioxide in the case of plants, for creating its photosynthesis to grow. And so we chose that because it's the carbon sequestration ratio for plants, as well as the compression ratio for making the bamboo. Then I did the eucalyptus, then I did the recycled woods, and now I'm doing hempwood. So I basically press it times the Fibonacci sequence to get the optimum density, which equals the hardness, the stability, and the fire resistance.
Wow, interesting. So when you're producing the product itself, are you incorporating the Fibonacci sequence into that design somehow?
Absolutely.
That's cool.
That determines what's called biomimicry. So that determines the density of my finished good.
So that helps with the structural integrity. It helps with how it performs, like you said, the density. So you're able to sort of pack in the most value, so to speak, using this sacred geometrical structure that nature provides for us.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. So in terms of, do you have any reference or statistics about like the polluting aspects of lumber, or you know what the degradation is as far as deforestation and things of that nature?
Yeah, so it, being in this space now for 22 years, you come across all different types of things. And the reality is forestry is a good thing when done right. You have to select a forest harvest. You have to clear out the underbrush. You have to call out certain trees that come in, especially the ones that become aggressively coming into your area, like where we are here, a big problem that you have in Kentucky is hardwoods grow slower. And when a tree grows slower, if you fell an oak or a hickory out of the woods, then a poplar or three poplar are going to take its place. And then you're losing your biodiversity that comes from everything that happens with an oak tree, being able to feed the squirrels, all of those different types of things. And so when doing forestry, if you do selective harvesting on a regular planned basis and clear out the underbrush when you're doing it, instead of just chop down the tree and take the parts that are worth money and leave the rest to catch on fire later, then it's a really good thing because it allows trees to grow back and pull that carbon back out and sink them for a longer period of time. The problem is it's not as profitable as if you go in and clear cut the forest, where they go in and just level the entire area and take the hardwoods and sell it into flooring, furniture, cabinetry. They take the softwoods and sell it into plywood or 2x4s or things like that. And then they take the rest of it and either leave it there or chip it. And that's how they make their OSB or things of that nature. Hmm. And then all of a sudden, it can take 20, 50, even 100 years for that forest to get back to its biodiversity, which is actually what makes the world go round. And so if people did it properly, just like gardening in your own backyard is a great source of food. But if you're trying to make maximum amount of money out of that, then you're going to start row cropping. Nothing wrong with row cropping until you start having to do things that are used to increase the yield, which means spraying a bunch of petrochemicals. So there's smarter ways to do stuff. There's more profitable ways to do stuff. And you typically have to make that choice. It's the same way in building materials. Vinyl flooring is 60% of the flooring made in this world and sold to people. It's also one of the most toxic chemical compounds that you can get. Mm. And so that train that wrecked in Ohio last year, that caught on fire and burned for days and they had to evacuate the town, that was headed to a vinyl flooring mill. That's the chemical components that are going into 60% of the flooring sold in the United States, originally developed for chemical warfare in World War I. Now it's known as vinyl chloride.
Wow. That's so scary. Just realizing that, I mean, we're just being, I mean, it's not directly murder, but we're definitely setting ourselves up for all sorts of conditions and issues by living in spaces that are off-gassing these chemicals. So the need for your product is so essential and more people need to know about it. What do you think in terms of, I guess, like comparison, you've got these vinyl floorings, you've got, you know, lumber products, you've got bamboo. How would hemp wood products compared to these other products in terms of like its density, in terms of its application, in terms of just like, you know, pound for pound, how does it compare? What would you say that it's equivalent to or closest to?
Tropical hardwood. So tropical hardwood. The durability and longevity of a high density product like hempwood, it's a 100-year floor. Your grandkids are going to be using it. And so if you look at it from that perspective, just like if you're getting a hickory floor, teak floor, mahogany, something like that, it's going to last longer than you will. And you won't have to replace your floor. When you're putting in vinyl, planned obsolescence, vinyl flooring, 10-year floor. Mm. But people are going to put it in, take it out. It costs a lot less. It's much more profitable because they're going to get somebody to do it every 10 years and spend $3, $4 a square foot instead of buying something that's $8 or $10 a square foot, and it lasts 10 times longer. It's the same scenario as if you're buying a McDonald's hamburger or if you're trying to get a steak that you actually know is meat. You know what I mean? There's a big difference in there, but you get what you pay for. And oftentimes that's the issue with people that are searching out healthy materials that last longer are going to cost a little bit more than something that's imported. Like most of your flooring right now in the United States, plywood too, is imported from Vietnam or Cambodia because the labor rates are low. It's not like the actual materials come from there that they're making it. They just sent it there because you can pay less which means you can make your computer profit with companies like Shaw and Mohawk and Lumber Liquidators and Home Depot and Floor and Decor. That's where all their flooring comes from.
Interesting. So
we're set up to feed into that big corporate system.
That's great. So when customers come to you, whether it's, you know, flooring contractors or builders or just individuals that want to do a project in their home, what are some of the common questions that they have for you? What do they want to know about your product?
So typically when people contact us is when they catch on to like how much dirty stuff is actually going into the materials going into their home, whether it's asbestos going in your floor or it's vinyl chloride going into it, whether you've got lead paint or lead in your pipes, things like that. People get fed up and are like, hey, you know what? I don't want to get sick from buying a cheap home. And so they call us and say, hey, what's your VOC emissions? That's one of the most important things. Sustainability, especially for commercial, being the only carbon negative flooring option in the United States, is a big plus for us. And we have all those accreditation and certifications for that. We actually turn our waste into our energy. So we have a zero waste process because all our waste hemp goes into the bio burner, heats a fluid that goes to the radiators in our ovens, kilns, dryers, as well as the building heat, circles back and gets heated up again. And that bio burner spits out biochar, which is our fertilizer for planting hemp the next year.
That's and we super can cool. Do all that.
Yeah.
That's in alignment with the whole Fibonacci sequence, just having that circular system. That's really fascinating. So the bio burner is a way for you to basically heat your place with the waste, right?
Well, it also powers our mill. Is where all of the thermal energy comes from for our dryers, for our kilns, for our ovens, as well as for the place. So the heating for the building. And then we have hydroelectric. So I built the factory next to Kentucky Dam, which is on the Tennessee River. So we've got hydroelectric and bio-waste thermal energy. The only thing that actually uses fossil fuels around here is our barbecue. And we got two forklifts and a telehandler.
Cool. That's awesome. So when these people are coming to you, you specialize in flooring, but your products can be used in other applications too, right?
That is correct. So right now, with our two mills in Kentucky, and we got 24 employees, plus my wife and I, so there's 26 of us. We work Monday to Saturday. Sunday's the day off. Just don't touch that. Everybody gets to do what they want to do. We make flooring is about 80% of our sales. We do furniture, which are tabletops, countertops, desks, things like that. We also do quite a bit of accent walls, and we sell a bit of lumber that go into people making craft goods.
What is a craft kit?
Craft goods are going to be something.
Oh, craft goods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are turning pens. People are making game calls. People are making picture frames. People are making lots of items that are kind of your garage carpenter.
Musical instruments?
Lots of guitars and drums and things like that. Amplifiers, yep.
Cool. So to kind of dial into the product line itself, is it one product that you're offering that can be made into these different applications, or do you have kind of different grades and different levels of product or different cuts?
Oh, so we have two cuts, which is the rift sawn, so rift and quarter sawn, and we have live sawn, just like you have for lumber. It's basically the grain direction, how you cut the log. And then we have our select grade, so premium select and common grade that come out of that. And that's typically number of knots, color variation, size, things like that. Wider, longer, less knots, less color variation, that's select grade. Common grade is everything that falls outside of select. And then we do turn it into flooring. We do turn it into panels. We do turn it into accent walls and furnitures.
Very cool.
We're making all those things. Our biggest customers are when we're doing schools or universities or whenever somebody's building a dispensary or wanting to put it in their house, we'll send the job pack directly to the job site. So maybe it's 2,500 feet of flooring for a restaurant and 16 tables and an accent wall and a bar top. And we'll send it all straight to the job site according to their specification so we can then get it out there.
Very cool. And to kind of take a step back in terms of price point, square foot comparison, would you say it's pretty much par with these other hardwood products that you described?
We're directly competitive with domestic hardwood. So if somebody's making an oak or hickory floor in the United States, I'll sell it to you dollar for dollar. If somebody's kind of cutting corners by buying Russian oak that's filtered through Cambodia to turn it into flooring, you can buy that stuff for half the price.
So there's a deeper level when you're investing in a product like this. Number one, there's environmental reasons. Number two, there's longevity reasons. You're going to get a product that's, like you said, a 100-year product, going to outlive you. So you're adding more value to whatever structure it is that you're putting it in. But it's also cool because it's hemp. I mean, we've really experienced 100 years of demonization and having this plant be pushed under the rug and not utilized with all the propaganda that was put out. So it's really, I think, crucial for people to be choosing a product like this to show that it can replace these other toxic materials. But to talk about the process, are you pretty secretive and private? Like, is it a proprietary process, or are you able to share kind of the steps that the hemp goes through from harvest all the way to becoming a floor? Can you give us kind of a broad picture of what that process looks like?
Yeah, it's easy. You can go on YouTube and see unlimited videos about what we do. You can check out our social media, Instagram, Facebook, all of those different things. And you can see we've actually had different photography companies or cinematography companies come in here and make videos of it. It's pretty easy. We even put out an 8-part kind of short clip video sequence last year called How the Heck Do We Make Hempwood? And it actually got about 10 million views.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So it's happening. People are really interested. They're kind of sitting on the fence, and interest rates going way up means that people aren't remodeling their houses. That's why we're in a lot more commercial these days.
Right.
Yep. But I can say that what we do is we grow hemp here. We pay for the carbon as well as the hemp to the farmer. And I'm a farmer myself. We grow it on my own farm. We'll grow a couple hundred acres, maybe 250, 300 acres in our co-op, and then we'll buy about a similar amount. So we end up with between 400 and 600 acres a year, probably. We do it right here in Western Kentucky. We have a little bit of material that comes in from Missouri, from Indiana, from Illinois, from Tennessee even. But it all comes here. We take it. We break open the cell structure of the plant. We soak it in a soy-based adhesive using those soy proteins to densify the cell wall of the hemp herd. Then we put it into a dryer using our waste as our thermal energy to dry it out. So we're drying out that water that was the vehicle to drag those soy proteins into it. Then we weigh it and put it into our press, hit it with 3,000 tons of pressure to press it into a 6x6 log. Once it's in these molds and these billets, we take it and put it in an oven and bake it overnight. And that oven is powered by our waste as well. Then it comes out the next day. We pull it out of those molds. We let it set for 2 weeks. And then we cut it into the size material that we need, put it into our dryers. And those dryers are also powered by our waste. And then we send it to our second mill, which is in the industrial park in town, where we make the flooring, the furniture, and the cabinetry.
Very cool. Yeah, just harvesting, and then, like you said, just saturating in the soy-based binder protein thingy-majig, and then compressing it, or I guess you have to dry it out, like you said, and then putting it into the compression. Is that like a mechanical process that you manually have to do, or is it mechanized, the pressing and forming the boards?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look at those videos, man. We got $5, $6 million worth of equipment here. It's what I did with the bamboo. So I've built 61 of these mills around the world in China, Poland, Ukraine, Australia, now the US. It does need to be more automated. That's primarily because hemp is a little bit more complicated to work with. Same with soy, but it's right there. I mean, we're making it all day, every day, and even on Saturdays. and we're sending it out there. I would love to say we're going to do 1 million square feet of flooring this year, but we'll probably be more like 600,000.
Cool. Well, hopefully we can help you get to that million by sharing this message. So as far as hemp, the hemp that's being grown, does it have to be a very specific variety? Do you have to grow it in a specific way? Like, for example, would you be able to use any input that's a hemp-based product? Like if it was grown for grain or if it was grown for flour, could you use that input, or does it have to be specifically grown for this application?
Well, floral hemp is not hemp. That is a kind of a battle area in the hemp industry. And I don't say it publicly out to the market and try to get people overregulated or anything, but it's somebody who is genetically modifying hemp to try to get it to do something. That's what THC is. That's what CBD is. You're genetically modifying a natural plant to try to get it to get you high or cause you to sleep. And nothing wrong with that. I take CBD to go to bed at night, but let's call a spade a spade. You're not farming hemp for flower. You are gardening hemp for flower. And it's only females that have to get started with the seed at a time to determine what it is. We put 50 pounds an acre out there, 1 million plants an acre. We plant it the same way you plant wheat, and we farm it. That's actual farming. It's agriculture, yeah. Not horticulture. So cannot use the CBD stalks to make our product. And that is because those are not the typical hollow core of a natural hemp product. They are a solid wood core, which then turns out to not be able to have the cell structure broken down so you can build it back up. We do use grain hemp. We do fiber hemp. And so both of those work as a dual purpose. They work really well. We just try to steer clear. We got a lot of friends that do it for the flower, but it's a vitamin, it's a medicine. It is not farming. Yeah. Food is the seed, it's not the flower. And so separating the two would be the best thing that could happen to the hemp industry.
Right. Yeah, it's manicuring and like you said, gardening. It's a much different ball game, a whole different plant. I mean, obviously not a different plant, but like you said, it's genetically modifying it, but organically, obviously, you're selecting.
It is a different plant.
Yeah.
It is a different plant.
Mm-hmm.
Period. It's not the same plant.
Exactly.
It's like saying maize from the Native Americans is the same as corn that is grown right now with glyphosate.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as far as your future vision, you know, thinking optimistically, where would you like to see the hempwood product line, your company? Let's say 5 to 10 years from now, what would be an ideal situation that you'd like to see yourself in the company?
Just keep growing. We just got to keep doing what we're doing. There's no shortcuts to success. It's hard work. And so that's all we're doing is just grinding it out. I wish that grain and fiber hemp was identified as separate from floral hemp, so we didn't have to get drug tests and background checks. And I am a farmer. I think that paying $500 to grow a crop and then having to pay $50 every time you get it tested is ridiculous. But I'm making more out of it. I understand why they do that, because most people are into trying to grow something for the psycho effects of it. And or the vitamin effects, human consumption. And that should be regulated, because you got to watch out what's going into people's bodies. Mm-hmm. I live on a 171-acre organic farm. So I know what hard farming is, where you're not allowed to spray stuff. And I can see right in front of our farm on the neighbor's farm, whenever they go to spray the fields there, all of the critters, whether it's your bugs, whether it's your bats, whether it's your bees, whether it's your birds, or deer or anything, they just disappear from those fields for a couple of weeks because they're all getting killed by what's getting sprayed on. They run over to our property.
Right. To the haven, the hemp haven. So gears here a little bit and get into more of the entrepreneurial side of things and, you know, operating a hemp business, getting new customers, keeping those customers. What have you found are some of the ways that you've been able to successfully market your brand, your products? What insights can you share with our listeners that maybe have a hemp company and they're looking for ways to better market their products and get new customers?
Sharing your story is the biggest deal. And so letting people know the trials and tribulations of what's going on and what's happening is the best way that you can get things started. I can say that for people being able to see that it's made in America and see what's happening and see your crop and see the folks making it and selling it and where we're going to be at trade shows, people can participate in the journey. And then when you're going about it that way, you're not dealing with customers, you're dealing with your friends, people that are along for the same ride. And so just publicly sharing what's going on and how it's happening helps a lot. Also, the number one way to not have your business fail is don't pay yourself until everybody else gets paid. Simple entrepreneurial fact, but that's what separates the people who can be entrepreneurs to the people who cannot. And that's simply because if you can't afford to eat glass and stare into the abyss and not take a paycheck for, say, 5 years, you should probably stick with what you're doing before, because it's going to be gut-wrenching and it's going to be hard and you're going to have to try to find support and you're going to take out a second credit card to be able to buy materials for your shop. And if you can't take that type of stress, then do something different.
Mm-hmm. Maybe work for a hemp company instead of starting one.
Yep. It's a new industry. So our business started out 6 years ago, and it was a new business in a new industry, in a new location with a new product. And so any one of those factors would have a 95% fail rate. Mm-hmm. And then you got 95%, 5% of 5% of 5% of 5%.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, and I love what you said. Don't pay yourself until you pay everyone else. I think Simon Sinek either wrote a book or was quoted for saying, leaders eat last.
Yes.
That kind of sums up exactly what you said.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, so I mean, we're chugging along here. It's not easy. It is definitely a struggle. It is something that the world needs. And so that is our life mission to get it going. And we just need to kind of promote it and say, hey, we're not against the laurel side of it. I understand the benefits of some of the floral aspects, but it is something being ingested into the body for vitamin or pharmaceutical or recreational purposes. And that is different than making hardwood floor out of it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yep.
So to go a little bit deeper on this topic of entrepreneurship, running a business, what would you say are some of the most important channels to get your message out there? Obviously, a lot of hemp companies, even if you're selling a t-shirt or flooring, these ad networks tend to not be favorable toward anything hemp-based. So I'm not sure if you've experimented with that at all, or if you're just doing like organic social media posts, but what are some of the channels that you guys have been able to use?
We have no issues whatsoever for advertising. So we have our Instagram page has got a good following. YouTube's got a good following. Google Ads, we do a lot of stuff on there. We've got a website, hemphood.com. You can find us as the one and only Hemphood across the board. Mm-hmm. So it's all there. I do hear a lot of people say that their hemp companies have problems with Facebook and things like that. I have heard that a lot. I don't know if it's about flower or seed or fiber or if they make a difference between it. I know we've had a couple of times that we've had to go and say, oh no, that's not us, just because it's trying to catch the hemp word. But they put our ads right back up. They don't take them down. You just click and say, hey, I'd like to have that revisited.
And yeah, they always Google is definitely one of the ad networks that's been more friendly to non-cannabinoid hemp-based products. So that's great to know. Cool. So Instagram, YouTube's obviously direct traffic right to your website. And I would imagine you've got a good word of mouth going on, people using your product and sharing that with other people too, right?
Yeah, people love it. People love the mission of what we're on. We're doing something right. And so people follow along, people appreciate what we're doing, and it becomes like a village where our farmers, our employees here at the factory, we have an employee share option plan. Everybody who's a manager here is working for themselves because they're an owner in the company. We have our customers and our resellers and our retailers, and everybody throughout the process is on a first name basis. And when we get together, I bring organic beef and pork and eggs. I feed my chickens hemp seeds, which is illegal. You're not allowed to sell them, but I'm still alive. I've been feeding them for 5 years. When I go somewhere, our customers or our friends or whatever you want to call them, I show up and I'm like, hey, let's throw some steaks on the grill. Here's some Black Angus grass-fed organic beef that I finished with blueberries on my farm. Let's have a look at what this looks like. And by the way, I brought a bottle of Kentucky bourbon too. Let's get down. So it just becomes a lifestyle. You have to enjoy what you're doing, because if you're doing it for the money, you're in the wrong industry. And money is just a means of keeping score of energy exerted. It's numbers on a piece of paper that tell you how much you're allowed to buy, which is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's going back to the whole Fibonacci sequence to kind of close this out. You know, I've often seen money as what it is. It's currency, it's energy, like a currency going through a wire. Or if you think of it in terms of water, you know, water is a natural resource. And that's why we say we have our relationships, you know, all of life is relationship. And we're all relating on this ship, and the ship is, you know, floating on this water. And that's why they say currency flows, like, you know, money flows. Or that's why you find deposits on the river bank, and that's why you put your deposits at the bank. So, you know, there's a lot of synchronicity or catchphrases. That's why, you know, in business we say, I'm trying to stay afloat, you know, I got to stay liquid. I gotta keep the flow, you know, like we're staying above water here. So life is all about relationships, and the more value we can provide as a creator, as creators that we are, that's where the value exchange happens. So the more value we put into the marketplace, the more currency or energy that will come back equally. So it's been super fun. I have a sort of philosophical question for you as a last question that I always love to ask my interviewees on the podcast here. If you were to be on a stage and you were literally standing in front of the entire human race and you had 30, 60 seconds to share a message with humanity, what would you want them to know? What would you leave humanity with as your message for them?
That's easy. So doing the right thing is oftentimes not the easiest nor the most profitable, but in the long run, it's what you have to do.
Wow. So succinct and very beautiful. I appreciate that. And it's very true. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into another episode of Hemp Aware Radio. Go to hempwood.com. Check out Greg and the Hempwood brand on Instagram and the YouTubes. Go watch those videos and share them with your friends and your family. And if you're wanting to build your own structure, your own hemp house, and you want to lie the flooring with hemp, or if you're doing a little hemp wood project, definitely check out the Hempwood products. You'll be very pleased and want to share it with others. So thanks again for tuning in, everyone. This is your Hemptrepreneurial host, Tyler Hemp, here to empower your hemposphere. See you on the next show.
Thank you, everybody. If you need some hempwood, give me a holler.